This is the Convene podcast. My name is Magdalena Tanasova, digital media editor of Convene. Welcome to part two of our talk. If you joined us last week, you know we discussed the dynamics between different generations and their engagement with events, and we ended up with a question from Jen on how Michelle and Barbara's generations were in their 20s. Enjoy the episode.
Speaking for myself, I don't know whether I speak for my generation, but I think we started to start questioning authority. When I was growing up, we were taught not to question authority. Your teacher was always right. You never asked the doctor, you know, questions. Whatever the doctor told you is what you had to follow. And that could have been the way I was brought up by my parents, because I think definitely their culture was you didn't question authority, you just followed the rules. When I entered the workforce, I don't think I really questioned, like, why are we doing things this way? Or went to my first conference. It was all like, for me, going to these things was sort of like, oh, like a culturation for me. Like, oh, this is the way it's done. I don't know whether I actually said, well, why is it done this way? This doesn't make sense. I welcome that people are questioning things now. And I wish I had questioned things earlier in my life, because I think I was always just taught, or I just accepted that I needed to just follow along and don't break the rules. But I love that people question things now, and they should, because where is it written that everything has to be a certain way?
I had a very similar experience about don't question the teacher. Like, even if your parents thought the teacher was wrong, I remember having some kind of punishment. And my mother was like, yeah, that's unfair, but do it, because that's the teacher's in charge. You just need to get to where you're in charge. When you're in charge, you can do it the way you want to do it. And there was like the last thing my mother would have done was questioned a punishment. When I entered the workforce, I worked in newsrooms, and those are kind of different because everything you do is kind of defined, like you have a lot of autonomy around how you do things. And so I didn't have that feeling of that I couldn't question, like people welcomed my questions always. What I saw later was how entrenched the patriarchy is. You know, like when I would read novels, I would identify with the male protagonists, you know, and it wasn't until later that I was like, oh my gosh, look at how that power structure is entrenched in that, and how I jumped over that. And so anyway, I think I would push back a little bit, Casey, on saying that the younger generation is pushing for change. I feel like I interviewed, and I won't remember her name, so she was talking about age. This has been about 5 years ago. She's an activist. And she was like, you know, age is when people get older, they're much more different from one another than generations that are younger. Like people that are in their 60s are way more different from each other than people in their 20s, because they've just made these different paths and habits.
I saw an interview with Steve Martin this weekend. I love Steve Martin. And I think he said something for me that really resonated, which is, as you get older, you can become the best version of yourself, or you can become the worst version of yourself. And I think I see a lot of older people who are just falling back on their things that weren't so great about them when they were younger, where they just are starting like to really dig into those entrenched thinking and not being open to growing. And so I hope that I'm trying to be a better version of myself, but I definitely saw that reasoning play out in my situation with the people I interact with in my generation. Casey, I think you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I was also just going to say a great point for how you can't really define an entire generation by a certain label just based on an age range. Jen was saying how she entered the workforce and then the recession hit. I'm a millennial also, but I was 15 when the recession hit and wouldn't enter the workforce for another 6 or 7 years. So, you know, even though we're both millennials, our experiences have been extremely different.
And Barbara, I minored in women's studies in college. So I got that there was definitely a patriarchal society and
right. And
that like influenced the way I did my academic studies. But like, wow, women's studies in the 70s and 80s, that was like a really big thing.
So I don't want to go on and on, but the librarian in my hometown complained to my mother that I was checking out Germaine Greer and feminist authors from the public library. And like, that would never happen now. And I will say,
I wouldn't say that would never happen
now,
Barbara.
Well, that's true. But my mother did not like that I was reading Germaine Greer, but she did not like the librarian. She was like, you know, she can read whatever is in this library, and I don't need to know about it. So anyway,
I do feel like I wish we would start acknowledging a little bit more, just like the way things have been paved by the generations before us. I think there's a trend now to like really say some negative things about the older generations, and I'm not loving that because I feel like a lot of people don't understand. Like, we all do the best we can with what we have. You know what I mean? Because we're dealing with, you know, or we're just trying to figure out, you know, what our paths forward. And like you were saying, like what was acceptable, like what was acceptable or what was not acceptable in your time, you know, this librarian trying to tell you, you can't read something, you know what I mean? And like that's, you know, you think about that now. Well, actually now we're banning books in Florida. You know, anyway, I feel like people just need to acknowledge that it's a continuum. Like, we're constantly building on what people before us have laid down, bad and good, for sure. There's some not so great things too, but I feel like that's just not acknowledged enough, like in this like overall conversation that I'm seeing in the media and just also on social media, just like TikTok and just TikTok, you know, all the channels. And it's just like, I don't know. It's a little bit harsh.
What do you feel is not being acknowledged?
You know, just, I think that there is a tendency to say a lot of negative things about, oh, things are the way they are because of boomers, or things are the way they are like that. Yeah. And I don't like that. I just feel like it's just not a very honest picture that people are painting, you know, like again, like everyone does the best that they can with what they have. And I feel like people don't understand that things were different back then. And you guys did a lot. I mean, I know that, you know, in the 60s and 70s, a lot of change was made. I feel like sometimes younger people forget that. So I don't know. I just wish the whole like generational thing, you know, also people love to make fun of Gen Z a little bit too, but you know, we were all young once, like, you know what I mean? I just feel like that discourse just needs to kind of go to the wayside.
And I think the nuance there, Jen, is that I think when people talk badly about, you know, oh, boomers won't let us change anything, they're talking about a certain type of person, which is exactly what Michelle was saying earlier. As you get older, you can either choose to remain open and keep evolving and keep progressing and be open to new ideas from younger people, or you can just bury yourself deeper into, no, it has to stay the way it is. So I think those are the people that they're talking about, not the even though they do generalize, that's who they're talking about. And I think if you remain open in that kind of person who's trying to better themselves all the time and remain, you know, progressive in your ideas, you'll always be open to what new trends are coming through and see how it can apply to your own life in a positive way.
We should all aspire to be like Steve Martin, who I think is such a quintessential Renaissance man. I love him so much.
But, you know, the question was, you were not very nice when you were younger. That was the question. He had a reputation for not being a very nice person. And
really?
Yes. And he has. And the question was, how come you have become nicer? And he said, I worked on it and I realized you could, you know, really become a better person, be the better part of yourself. I think he was very standoffish when he was younger. And he has changed and become warmer and more engaging and friendlier. And
I had no idea he had that reputation. I just always assumed he was like his character in Father of the Bride. Just like the perfect dad.
That's called acting.
Yeah,
I believe it, though. I believe it so much. Plus, he's a great author. Oh, my God. He's so talented in his bluegrass band. I just love Steve Martin. He's like, you know, Tom Hanks. He's just like Dolly Parton, American Treasures.
And I think just, you know, if you like would apply that to business events, like I think, yeah, we can do this, is that, you know, I really love the movement towards belonging and inclusion, because at its heart, it's really like, recognizing what other people need and being empathetic to that to the extent that you can. And I think the big reward in that for people that are planning events is the outcome of it. Is that people are able to contribute. And, you know, speaking of dietary restrictions, Michelle remembers when I used to travel with my own, you know, food because I couldn't get the food that I needed at conferences, and that's all changed. And when I go somewhere that is accommodating, I feel so warmly towards them. You know, it's like, it's an opportunity, not like a burden, I think, to figure out what it is that people need to be there. So they don't have to worry about eating. They don't have to worry about, you know, do I have access to that? That they could just be there.
I love that. Kurt, do you have anything to add? I feel like we've kind of squeezed you out of that conversation.
I don't know.
What generation are you, Kurt, by the way?
I don't know. I think I'm on the border of Gen X and
Boomer.
Boomer, yeah. But I don't know. I've thought about this a lot because wasn't there a spate of Gen X movies for a while back in the day, Reality Bites and that, or was that Gen Z? I don't even know. Anybody?
That would be Gen X, not millennial.
Yeah.
So I think
I don't know. I always felt like I haven't felt like I was stereotypical any of those. And I think that I have pieces of a lot of different generations. Lately, the curmudgeon generation, but that's only because my Wi-Fi hasn't worked. No, I think that I've, over the years, I feel like I've recognized a lot of different things in my beliefs and what I do and everything. And I don't think that it's that, I don't know that, I think I'm with Jen that it's not necessarily, you can't put people in boxes like that. And I think it's still true. In fact, I feel like I'm getting, I don't know. Like I could go without working for a long time too. Like the Gen like the Gen Zs want to do, or whatever it is they want to do. yeah, I don't know. I don't buy into the whole generation stuff that much.
You haven't been Exhibit A in a conference. I've actually been singled out in a conference session back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the day when millennials were coming into the workforce, and there was a whole session about understanding millennials. So I was very curious to see how people are understanding us. And I went to that session, and then they started pointing things out about millennials. And the speaker asked, so is there a millennial in the room? And I was the only one that raised my hand. And I remember it was a man. I don't remember who exactly was the speaker. It was a man who said, so I'm going to give you the traits of millennials. So they have something about their personal brand. Like they always have a tattoo. Do you have a tattoo? And I was like, yeah, I do have a tattoo. And he's like, there you go, Exhibit A. Then they're into social media. Are you into social media? I'm like, oh, yeah. And then there you go, Exhibit A. And I was like, oh my God, what am I doing here? It was embarrassing in so many ways. And so unfortunate. So every time when somebody refers to Gen Z, I feel like I go back into that situation. I'm like, damn. Poor Gen Z. I know how they feel right now with fingers pointed at them. And it's not nice.
As millennials, I think we know that we're still the topic of articles that are like, these darn millennials. And it's like, we're like Jen said, it's like, we're not teenagers anymore.
You know, I'm living here. I have these friends across the courtyard who have, there's a family, and they have a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old, right? And I watched this 12-year-old get online and just believe everything. Mm. You know, and so I do, and I don't know that this is necessarily a generational thing, because I think ever since the internet started back in the day when I was still an adult, possibility of that has been, you know, with every generation, I guess. But and so many adults already believe everything they read. And I think, you know, with AI, that possibilities grows even more, you know, that things can be faked and everything. So I guess I fear, if we want to talk about real young generation, I fear that that's a thing that maybe won't be. That'll be a problem at some day.
And I feel like things like, now I'm going to sound like a curmudgeon. I feel like things like TikTok, just recently, there's been a lot of talk about its value because it's potentially under threat. And I see a lot of people talking about it like, now I finally know the truth about everything and I don't want that taken away from me. And I'm like, you know, there's certainly a lot of great access to different information on there, but it's not all the truth. It concerns me that these different social media platforms are evolving in a way that people just take it all at face value because it's someone talking directly to them.
Right.
Yeah. I think the biggest challenge going forward over the next like decade too, it's going to be media literacy.
Yeah.
I was at a dinner the other night and I was talking to a woman and she works as like, I don't know what you would call her exactly, but she like helps people get into college and like coaches them on that. I don't think she's necessarily like a classic guidance counselor, but anyway, she works with young people, you know, of that age, and she was talking about that, and I was like, well, are they teaching media literacy? And she was like, no. And that's a really good question. And I'm like, they should start a movement. Like, this should be a required rubric, and like starting from like, you know, whenever they get on the TikTok, like fifth grade, who knows, I don't know, I feel like there's three-year-olds who have their own phones now, and like, you know, make that part of the curriculum all the way up through, you know, college. I feel like even as journalists, like we struggle sometimes. We're like, okay, well, I got to check that. And then I got to check that. And I got to check that. And it's becoming more challenging. So for professionals, if it's becoming challenging to the average 10-year-old or 12-year-old, like I can only imagine.
Maybe we should bake that into conferences for adults.
Great idea.
In any field, in any association, any field.
100%.
In one way that it's baked into conferences is that same Freeman report. They repeated it in a recent report, is that associations are at the highest level of trust, that people trust the information from their associations and the people in their associations, which, you know, I think just goes back to like having relationships with people where you trust them. And the less your relationships are actually bound into like real relationships where you know them, then it gets harder and harder to trust and easier to fake that intimacy.
Mm. I think that's a great conversation that we should continue about associations and the future of associations, yeah. Because yeah, that's something that needs reinvention.
Definitely, because I don't know whether younger generation, I'm going to stereotype, are really interested in joining associations the way like my generation did. But I definitely can see why they would be more trusted than like a corporate event, because obviously we all feel like it's very difficult to trust a company or a brand, whereas an association is a different entity. But I definitely think it is a really good conversation, because it's the whole membership model and whether that still is relevant today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that feels more trusted than media and government. And yeah, that would be a great conversation to have.
We have our topic for next week. Yeah, because this has been in circulation for, I don't know, I would say a decade easily. I've heard it, you know, being tossed around, and PCOs, large PCOs that also double as association management companies, discussing that because they need to help their clients move on. And their clients, associations, they have boards that are not permanent, right? They rotate and change often. So they don't have really the time and resources to address these big questions, which are very important for their future.
Right. Well, and in associations, if they don't have membership, they're not going to convene, basically, right? If they don't have people to convene.
All right. So let's leave this for next week. Otherwise, we will stay here forever.
I mean, that story lent itself to a very involved conversation that went in many different directions I did not see coming.
Yeah, and I actually wrote at the very beginning when Barbara spoke, captivated, not captured. And I'm like, this is going to be the title. And now it could be, but it could be one of 200. So
I got to stay with you where the story goes.
Yeah. The title should be more like Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Yes. Steve Martin.
Let's see how many clicks that's going to.
Yes. There you go.
It was on the Kuvine podcast.
Admit that. Maybe if we named it that, it would like somehow catch
it. Or like Steve Martin, the Convene podcast. All right, guys. That was really good. Thank you, Maggie. Thanks, everybody.
I might try to actually
do our sign off, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get there. Okay. Just to say thank you. As usual, there will be links in the in the show notes. And don't forget that actually liking the podcast, following the podcast, downloading the podcast, all that supports us in our work. So do that. And until next time, talking about associations, I guess.
Yes. Goodbye to all the generations. Until next week.